When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Like, yeah, this guy doesn't approve of what this guy is doing, and so on and so forth. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. who's that guy again?
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
Everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined by Barrett Scher from
Hello.
CinemaSins and Music Video Sins.
Hello.
and from all the things, Jonathan Watkins.
Hello.
And today we're going to do a mini pod of Irishman.
Scorsese pod.
Waiting for somebody to say something. You know, Irish pod sounds kind of racist.
It does.
Can't say that.
Yeah. Irie pod sounds Jamaican.
Pesci pod.
Yeah.
Pesci pod.
That sounds like something you find at Spencer Gifts.
Mm-hmm. Hoffapod.
Mm-hmm. Hoffapod.
Hoffapod. Hoffapod. This movie has had a limited theatrical release, but it, of course, is best known as a big Netflix movie that was released on November 27th on that service, that movie and TV show sharing service.
Entertainment Hub.
This feels like their biggest release. Too, like, I know they've had other big releases. I mean, I know, like, last year, obviously, Roma.
Mm-hmm.
But this is like, I mean, there's a lot of money behind this, and
sure.
It's Scorsese and De Niro, and I mean, I don't know. This feels like a change of guard in some ways.
I agree. Roma was a movie that, you know, that was one of their first getting a huge director to do a movie for them, type of thing. But it's so indie. Feeling and everything, you could see that, you know, most people are used to seeing movies like that on a smaller screen anyway. Most people wouldn't have seen that in a theatrical release. This movie, however, is something that everybody would have probably, like, not everybody, but a lot of people would have gone and have gone to see on a big screen. I saw this at the Bell Court a couple of weeks ago. And it was a packed house, and I had wondered about that. Like, would there be a lot of people for this when it's going to be on Netflix? And yes, there's a craving to see a movie like this on a big screen.
Yeah, and I mean, without spoiling your opinions of it, do you think you were rewarded by seeing it on the big screen?
I was both rewarded, and I was also pulled out of some things because of it.
Okay.
And it's mainly just me. It has nothing to do with what Scorsese did, but it's because I can't. I'm like a lot of you guys. I mean, I can't hear great. I'm not like Jeremy's got that whole like. One side of his ear, you know, one ear is like just almost completely not working. Me, I just kind of like have that degradation over time, and I can't hear certain things.
Yeah.
When people say character names and place names and things like that in the middle of a normal sentence, I'm like, what did they just say? I can't visualize what they're saying. So when you have names like, you know, whatever, they throw 100 names in this thing. Whenever they're going through that whole, like, there's a scene where, and without getting into spoilers, there's a scene where Pesci is talking to De Niro, and Pesci's like, yeah, this guy, doesn't approve of what this guy is doing, and so on and so forth. And I was like, "Whoa, wait a minute, who's that guy again?" That you even had a joke about how too many people are named Tony in this.
Yeah. They were like, "Not that Tony, that Tony."
Yeah, and not that Whispers, this Whispers. Yeah. And like so many like different things like that were happening in the movie. So like a lot of times, towards the end, I was like, "Wait a minute." I thought I heard Pesci say, "I didn't want you here," and then he's there, and I was like, "Oh, is he just defying orders?" And then it took me talking to your cousin.
Oh, really?
Like later on, I was like, I didn't understand that part, and he was like, "Oh yeah, they wanted him there." I was like, "Oh well, it didn't seem like they did."
Oh yeah.
So I have watched this movie a second time.
Did you really?
I did. I watched Netflix? It on Netflix and with the subtitles.
Yeah.
And everything, and I was like, oh, everything is so much more clear now.
Yeah.
And finally, yeah, that's exactly what I needed. So yes, big screen is great as far as the spectacle of it, but I needed that small screen, that subtitle and everything to kind of understand exactly everything that they're saying and why and whatever. So let's get into whether we like this or not.
Okay, I liked it overall. I will say it got better as it went along. I felt the second half was much stronger than the first half.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I haven't really read a lot of reviews. I don't know if that's I don't know what the general consensus is, or if people are even talking about it that way. But there is a lot of setup at the beginning, and there's a lot of introduction, and it was really nice being reintroduced to Joe Pesci, who I hadn't seen in anything in forever.
Yeah, he essentially retired.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. Because I've heard stories about big name directors have tried to get him to be in movies.
And I guess famously, Louis C.K. tried to get him on that show that he did that was you could only get it through his streaming service or whatever it was. And I remember, and it ended up being just a consultant on it, I think.
Yeah.
Louis C.K. wanted him on that show. Yeah. He wanted him to play one of the characters and just couldn't get him. And apparently it took more than 50 tries to get Pesci on this movie.
Scorsese's doing. Yeah. That's what I heard. Like there was all these, like they had to keep going back and talking to him and talking him into it. I'm glad they did. He's really good. It seems like that's one thing I've read is that a lot of people seem to think that a lot of people are talking about him as kind of being the standout, which when you've got a movie with De Niro and Pacino in it also, that's saying a lot.
It may be just due to the fact that it's understated. Like we're used to Pesci in Goodfellas and Casino being that asshole, psychopath.
Yeah.
And here he's not that at all, and it's very, very reserved and everything. He's not shouting, never once raises his voice, I don't think.
Yeah, I think that's definitely it, because he is very different from those characters.
Well, the funny thing is, he's just as dangerous, if not more, in this movie than he is in any of those others. So I think it's that convergence of him playing it differently but still being that live wire that can get shit done. That makes the performance so kind of vibrant, you know?
Yeah, but overall, I definitely liked it. I mean, it's always hard with Scorsese. He's one of my all-time favorite directors. You know, we were talking about Fincher before the show having so many, like, solid A's. I mean, Scorsese probably has, like, 10 of them and are pretty close to that. So, I mean, even though compared to his other films, this might go a little lower, you know, for a lot of directors, this would be one of their top films. So it's always kind of hard to weigh that. But overall, I definitely liked it. I don't think I quite loved it, but I definitely liked it.
Okay. What about you?
I think it's a really, really, really good movie.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen this movie before. I've seen this movie before in Scorsese movies. I've seen this movie before in the Hoffa movie that Jack Nicholson did. Was that Danny DeVito directed?
Yeah, I've never seen that movie, actually. I was thinking about that when I was watching this.
I actually watched the Hoffa last night.
Did you really?
Nice.
I hadn't seen it since, and it is weird, I haven't seen it since it came out, and I was 15 when I saw this movie.
Yeah, so.
And I didn't, everything went over my head. Yeah. But man, the Irishman, just as an aside, the Irishman was the return to form for the word cocksucker. I hadn't heard that so many times. But then Hoffa, they say it a million times.
It must have been a Hoffa thing.
It must have been a thing. But anyway.
Does it hold up at all, by the way?
What, Hoffa?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I don't think even when it came out, people were really high on it.
Yeah.
DeVito is definitely doing a job that he has never done before as a director. it feels maybe over directed a bit, because there's a lot of stuff in there. Like the very first scene is him in a truck, and this is his first meeting with Hoffa.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah,
like. Yeah. And like, and they, and they, and it makes it look like Hoffa is coming over there to kill him or something like that. And the camera zooms in on DeVito, and like, you know, this really tense scene. It's like there's no reason for that. And like, it looks like some of the things he's shooting is like he got off the set of Batman Returns, and it's like, Tim, can I use this for the set of Hoffa?
That was the same year, right?
Yeah, it was the exact same
92.
Year.
That's so funny.
I remember Jack Nicholson's performance being pretty good.
Yeah, it's one of the first times you've ever seen him, like, not just be Jack.
Well, yeah,
That's prime Nicholson, too, because that was also that was Few Good Men.
Few Good Men
year.
Came out the same year. J.T. Walsh was also in Hoffa.
Oh, that's right.
Nice. J.T. Yeah. Walsh, so, man. Missed that dude.
Here's emblematic. You know, it's Scorsese playing his greatest hits. The Still of the Night plays as they come into the retirement home at the beginning.
Yep.
It's all these, like, doo-wop stuff, like, that you've seen all the time in Scorsese movies. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Pacino. Pacino gives the weirdest performance. It's great, but it's also horrible to me. There's a part, this is emblematic of my feelings of this movie. So he's doing an accent. He's doing Jimmy Hoffa, who's a Midwesterner who overpronounces it, like REO Speedwagon, REO. They overpronounce their R's and stuff. But it's Pacino. So when he's all worked up, he can't help but be Pacino. Mm-hmm. So when he has that meeting of the guys in there, and he's like, I'm looking at the most fucking idiots I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And he's like, you dumb mother. Fuckers.
Yeah.
It's like, God damn it.
That's
pick a lane, dude.
Definitely his low part of the movie. I agree.
I think it's a really, really, really good movie. I just don't think it's necessarily necessary.
I don't disagree with you on Pacino. He's my all-time favorite actor, probably. But what I can't figure out is I don't know if it's him or if it's just the way they wrote the character in the script. Because I feel like at times, he's doing a lot of service. He's giving a lot more to the character than is on the page. But then there's scenes like that, which that could be. I mean, that was scripted too. So I mean, I assume. So maybe he just did what he could do. But I never once, like, De Niro and Pesci felt like characters. That was Pacino, like, the whole time. Like, I had a hard time distinguishing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's playing a real person. I mean, obviously, I guess they all are. But I had a hard time. It was always just Pacino.
Yeah,
being Pacino, and that's not a bad thing necessarily.
No, it's perfectly fine. I love seeing Pacino be Pacino.
If I have to pull out some negatives, quote unquote, I mean, he was my least favorite of the three.
Yeah,
I think it's a shame that he has scenes like that, because then we don't remember the stuff where he's really good.
Yeah.
Because those tend to overshadow. That's the way Pacino is. Like, I think Heat is a great performance, but what do we remember from that? He's got a great ass! You know, all that type of stuff. And, like...
You can't take the TV!
Yeah, exactly. You can't take my motherfucking TV! But, like, the scenes between him and De Niro when they're, like, you know, in the hotel room, and, like, the scene between him and Pesci at the award ceremony towards the end, and, like just quieter scenes where he's on the phone and you can see that, like, delusional self where he thinks he's got all this power and he doesn't.
Yeah.
And those are the moments that Pacino is great in, but we remember the ones where he's tongue bathing his lawyers in the office, you know.
And I will say, the scene with him and Pesci at the banquet, that's when that, I don't know what that is in the movie. That's maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big turning point for me, to where I thought it started getting a lot more interesting
for me.
And that scene was great. You know, him and Pesci play off each other really well in that scene. And I guess we've never seen them together.
I was wondering they've never been in a scene together.
And Pacino's never, he's never done a Scorsese movie. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was really good to see too. But like Chris and you were both saying, I think those are good examples of, or good points on Pacino's performance. But,
I kind of agree with you guys on some things. This is, it feels like it's something that's aiming very high, but it's not quite there.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's not quite I'm going to go ahead and do my letter grades,
cool.
But I don't think it's quite an A. I think it's solid B territory for me. It's easy because you have to compare it to all of his other crime movies, you know, especially Goodfellas and Casino. It's not as kinetic as those two movies. Like, there are some camera movements in there that you're like, oh, those are, that's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. There's two moments in this movie where he's doing like a roving camera thing. One, well, actually maybe three. One is the opening shot, but it's not very complex. It's not as complex as, it's probably very complex, but
well,
like,
it's not the Copa.
Right.
He's but, going through.
Well, and we don't need to see the Copa, but we just, it's, you know, the very opening scene is just going through a little like nursing home thing. And it's one shot, but like the other one is where they have the guy who gets shot at the barber shop. That's a big, like, you know, the camera's following this way around, goes out into an outer mall area, follows these two guys. And then it picks up two others, like a Linkletter movie. Picks up two other guys and then circles back around and then doesn't follow them where they go. You just hear gunshots and you just see flowers or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then there's another one he does later on. He does another similar, like, follows characters and then comes back. And so it's not like, it doesn't have that same kind of, but there are some editing things in here that he does that's got a little bit of that Scorsese. I don't know if Thelma Schoonmaker was on this one.
Oh, I think so. I think I read that.
Yeah, I don't know.
If she was, then typical.
Yeah,
typical. You know, good work from her. Where I thought he was ham-handed with his certain edits he made was a lot of reaction shots.
Yeah.
And I know we don't talk about this stuff that often in these reviews and everything, but they're very very noticeable in this one, especially during that banquet scene when you have Pesci talking to that main gangster dude, that Tony Scalera, whatever his name is.
Tony Pro? Or
no, it's not Pro. It's because Tony Pro is the Stephen Graham guy. This is the big gangster guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're talking about this stuff, and they keep cutting to Hoffa, and Pacino keeps on looking over at him like, I wonder what they're talking about. He's sitting there cutting that steak, and then they go back to them, and they're sitting there talking and more, and then they go back to Hoffa, and he's like, what are they talking about? And then there's like a scene where De Niro and Pesci are up in a balcony somewhere, and Anna Paquin is looking up at them, and then they have to keep like cutting back to her. What is she thinking right now?
Yeah, there's
what
a
is
lot
she
of
thinking?
Reaction. Shots from her
and it's just one of those things that sort of takes me out of the movie, because I feel like there are certain things that you should just let breathe, and we don't need to know what these people are looking at or seeing or anything. Just let it breathe, let it happen, because there's nothing that's going to come back later and be like, well, Hoffa was eyeing that conversation very intently.
Yeah.
And it doesn't come back.
Doesn't matter.
So it doesn't matter what he thought.
There is so much steak cutting in this movie, by the way. Now, granted, steak factors into some part at the beginning. Yeah. But my God, I've never seen so many people.
Bobby Cannavale is powering through all this shit.
Oh, yeah.
Kidding, man.
Oh, yeah.
So for doing grades, I'm actually going to go B+. I really, that last like hour and a half, I thought was vintage Scorsese in quite a few moments. And that's definitely the better Pacino moments. And I think the stuff with him and De Niro is so good. And I think the story just gets so much more interesting at that point when we're kind of trying to figure out like, what are they going to do with the Hoffa storyline, you know? And obviously we'll talk about that more in spoilers. So I am at B+. I will say I was solid B, I think, from the first half of the movie, and then it just elevated it enough to get it there. But yeah, it's not quite an A.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wish it was, but it's just I can't quite get there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is such a good movie, though. This is such a well done movie. Like you were saying, anybody else makes this movie, this would be.
Oh yeah,
Joe
Carnahan
movie.
Makes this movie. You're like, what the fuck happened to Joe Carnahan?
Yeah.
I think I would give it like an A-, because even though some of it didn't work for me, I think it's just such a good movie. But and I went into this. I watched it on Netflix, so I had time. But the length did bother me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to make that a thing because everybody's making that a thing.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a good movie, give me 6 hours of it. Mm-hmm. I'll watch all six hours of it.
Yeah, I know.
But I think that if it were edited a little bit, not edited within the movie, but if it were just pared down a little bit, I think we could have gotten a tighter movie and a more kinetic movie, like you were saying.
Is it possible that I like this movie more than you, but I've given it a lower letter?
I think so. I think so. Because I'm going to give it a B+.
I think that's a possible thing, by the way. I just think it's weird that I think I like this movie better than you, but I'm giving it a B.
Yes.
Yeah, and I feel like maybe like the parts I liked better than both of you. But yeah, it's possible you even liked it overall better than I did.
The other thing that very much distracted me, and I didn't want it to, same thing with the time, was the de-aging stuff. The de-aging was very distracting to me. Mm. I don't know if my computer or whatever I was watching it on, like, it had some sort of setting that smoothed it too much or whatever it was. I took off all the smoothing stuff. It looked like deep fake stuff every once in a while.
You watched it on a phone, like, didn't you?
No. I watched it on my computer, and then I watched it on my TV.
By the way, did you see Scorsese's thing about where he's like, at least watch it on a tablet? I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, that's funny. But it was distracting to me. Again, I think it's a really, really good movie, just with little flaws.
Do you guys think also it's possible that this felt more like something that would be made for television? Like, I don't know if that's true, but it does, and it could just be because it's for Netflix, you automatically kind of have that thought process, because I even remember the ballad, what was the Coen Brothers last?
Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Yeah, which I loved, mm-hmm. but it did feel like something that was more made for television as opposed to theater. But I think this could, I mean, obviously you saw this in the theater, so clearly this could play theatrically. I don't know. I just didn't know if that was part of it or if that's just me being...
I thought that's possible because talking to Barrett's cousin about this and everything, it was just like, you know, I was like, he told me about the book because he's read the book.
Oh, yeah.
I Heard You Paint Houses, Houses book. And he said that there was a lot of stuff that they cut out of the book. And I was like, oh, so do you think this would have been a good TV series where they give you every detail and everything? And he said he could see it as a series.
Yeah, yeah. It's weird because it's so long, but then there's some things that feel rushed, mm-hmm. right?
And when I say that, I'm not talking about like Lifetime TV movie or something. I'm meaning more like, you know, HBO doing like a really kick-ass TV movie or something. Mm-hmm. That's kind of more what this felt like to mm-hmm. me at times. And maybe that's why I can't really... it's hard to put it up against like Goodfellas and Casino and even The Departed,
mm-hmm.
or Gangs of New York. What, you know, pick your gangster movie from Scorsese. But, so I don't know. But still, like, overall, obviously really liked it.
But you were talking the de-aging thing. For me, the thing that made it weird was that they felt like they needed to be accurate as far as what Frank Sheeran's eyes looked like, so they gave De Niro blue eyes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where, for me, that's where the de-aging process failed, was that they wanted to be authentic there for some reason, and by doing that they made it inauthentic because De Niro doesn't have blue eyes.
Right. Yeah, put some fucking contacts in.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I didn't think about that, but I think I did notice it more with De Niro because I thought I don't remember Pesci really distracting me.
No.
And there's that scene where I guess they're meeting at that Texaco station or whatever, and
it's yeah.
Yeah, and Pesci looked, I mean, it kind of made sense, but yeah, De Niro looked a little off, and I don't, maybe that's it.
I think that's what it is for me.
Yeah.
I was sitting there going, there's something about this that's not hitting me right. It's the Uncanny Valley thing, but not in the way that it normally is, and it was just the eyes to me. It just felt like that's what it was.
It was the one that stood out to me is when he beats down the grocery guy,
mm-hmm.
and he's moving like a 75-year-old man,
even though he's
supposed to be in his mid-30s or something like that.
This had nothing.
He's supposed to be all hulky and brooding and everything,
right.
And he's like,
that was one of the things that they were talking about. That's one of the things that they were talking about, was that, you know, while it's easy to de-age, well, not easy, but, you know, you can de-age these guys to make them look like they're back in their 40s or whatever, the movements are what's hard to make. And they said there was that apparently there was a scene where they needed Hoffa to get out of his chair really fast or something like that. Pacino's in his 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had to make it, you know, it's like, because the first time he got up very, like, slowly.
Yeah.
He had to fast forward the footage. Yeah. And so, like, I don't know what, you know, what now?
Did they fast forward the footage?
I think they made him do it again. And they said, you're 47. Just grin and bear it. Okay, so we did like this. I wouldn't call this disappointing. I think this is
not at all.
I think this is a very good movie. I think it may be disappointing when you think that you're going to see an A plus or whatever, or you're expecting an A plus, maybe that's where it is, but it's still very good. Still well worth watching.
Yep.
Would be a recommend.
Absolutely.
Let's go on to the spoilers.
Kenneth Basie is Kaiser Soze.
Luke's father is actually Darth Vader. She's the sister and the daughter.
No. I'm reading the books.
So I don't get a chance to do much research on these things, and that's obvious because every time we say stuff, somebody comes onto Facebook and says, you know, this actually did happen. Yeah, or
you know all three cars finish at the same time.
Right, exactly. And oh, by the way, you're a dumbass. I did a little bit on this. The book, I Heard You Paint Houses, is, I think, largely in dispute by a lot of historians.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is from Frank Sheeran. This is Frank Sheeran. I think it's only his story told to this guy, Charles Brandt, who wrote the book. So a lot of people are like, you got this from him, but there's not really anything backing it up. And I read something from a Detroit historian who said that, you know, the character Pesci plays wasn't nearly the big cheese that they made it out to be. It's like, did Frank Sheeran kill Jimmy Hoffa? Probably not.
Yeah, I was about to ask you that. Like, is that so? That's what the book says. I mean, they got that from the book.
Yeah, yeah. Was he a buddy of Hoffa's? Well, probably they knew each other and liked each other, but to be his right-hand man, probably not. You know, that Detroit historian, and I wish I remembered his name right now, and I don't, but seems to think that the Detroit mob is way more involved in this than you know. And again, this is a case that a million people have looked at and have come up with wild theories, and nobody has any real answers because they're just, you know, you just throw your hands up.
I was going to say, there's never been anything declarative said about Hoffa,
no.
right?
No. The only thing that's declarative is that, yes, he was at the Red Fox Inn or the Red Fox, whatever the place was that he shows up. He shows up in this movie and gets picked up at the Red Fox, which I don't think is anything that is confirmed by eyewitnesses. Eyewitnesses saw Hoffa come out of this place, but nobody saw him get in a car and get driven off or anything like that I know of. Anyway,
they've never found his body, right? Is that right? Okay,
that's why there's there was rumors that he was under Giant Stadium and
rumors. I didn't know that about like the book background and stuff like that. I didn't even know if they were going to pick a lane and like say, this is definitively what happened. So that part was actually kind of cool to me.
Yeah.
That not only was they said, A, we killed him, B, we burned his body, and it's no more than that, and C, it's Frank Sheeran.
Yeah.
So at least they made a bold decision.
Kind of like Zodiac, right?
Yeah.
That is very much what I thought of this. And I think that's why that last hour or so really got me into it, because then it turned over into what's going to happen to Hoffa.
Yeah.
Or who's going to take care. I mean, you kind of had the idea he was going to die, but who's going to take care of Hoffa? So just playing all that out where he's having these conversations with De Niro and he's trying to get back in good with everybody and all that stuff. That was well done suspense. It was kind of almost a mystery at times, and a lot of good character work that the three of them really got to dig into some meaty stuff. So that's exactly why that stuff really spoke out to me and was, I thought, different. A little different from some of Scorsese's previous work.
I will say that even though the what happened to Hoffa may have not have happened, as The Irishman shows it, it's way better than the theory posed by the movie Hoffa, where an enterprising Frank Whaley is sitting in the roadhouse and like calling somebody about some rod he needs for his truck, and then he just happens to be the guy who is hired to kill Hoffa by the end of it.
I forgot that part.
So Hoffa is told through this, like, they're at a roadhouse. They're not at the Red Fox, even though I think that was known at the time, but they're at a roadhouse. Hoffa's in the back of the car. DeVito's playing whatever character he's playing, and like they're reminiscing about things, and it's a told in flashback and everything. Hoffa decides to stay in the car waiting for this meeting that he's taking with some gangster. And DeVito goes into the diner and he gets like coffee and all that, and there's a guy in the phone booth that's played by Frank Whaley.
Oh my God.
Who's on the phone yelling at somebody wanting to get this rod for his truck because he can't drive and all that. And he fits into the narrative because he's a truck driver. He's a union guy. Uh-huh. He's all that. And DeVito and him bump heads at first. And then, you know, they start to have this, they've been at the diner for 4 hours or whatever. They start to get this mutual respect. And by the end of it, DeVito helps him out. He calls his own union or calls somebody and says, here's my card. Tell them Bobby said to do this and that, and they'll do it. So, you know, Whaley gets on the phone. He starts talking to the guys and then they're like, oh my God, they said they're coming right out and all that. And great. He's like, hey, thank you. He's like, don't thank me. Thank this man out here. And like, they go out to the thing and he's like, here, give him this. And it's like, so like a little tray with coffees on it. And he goes out there and he puts the coffee on the roof of the car. DeVito's like way back in towards the diner and he sees Whaley like reaching for his gun and everything.
Oh
and,
my God.
And DeVito tries to pull out his gun, but oh, he left it with Hoffa. And Hoffa has the gun, but it's down on the floor and he's not seeing Frank Whaley yet. Whaley blasts him a couple of times and then, you know, Dak Nicholson has like got this like look on his face like he's about to, you know, like he's
oh
like
my God.
And he gets shot again and then DeVito gets shot and then they throw DeVito back in the back seat of the car, wheel the car onto this truck just shows up. And then the car like gets sent, like they take the car and drive it up these little ramp things up under the truck and the truck drives off.
Wow.
And at the end of the movie.
Can you imagine how embarrassing it would be to get killed by 1992 Frank Whaley?
I know.
I mean, this is a year after career opportunity.
Right? Man, Frank Whaley was in fucking everything back then, man.
Like he was. The Pulp Fiction hadn't even come out yet.
He was like this, it seemed like he's a good-looking kid. He was like apparently slaying every audition because he was in everything. But then he had that, it was just that tight group of, like in the 90s, he still works today.
Yeah, he does.
But like it was just seemed like in every prestige movie he was in it. He was even in JFK for a while, too.
I think they cut him,
they may have cut him out, I'm not sure. But
he was
a fake Oswald. I don't remember.
He might be in Broken Arrow.
I get his character in Broken Arrow and John Cusack and Con Air confused because they're both like quirky office types with gun skills and shit.
Yeah, Frank Whaley is in Broken Arrow. Yeah, Frank Whaley is in Broken Arrow.
So the Irishman.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Hey, you know.
No, I'm glad you told me that. Now I really want to go watch Hoffa.
No, Hoffa's guy is
ridiculous. I don't know how I've never seen that
movie. Hoffa's ridiculous. Like, it's almost funny how.
I feel like, and maybe I have seen it and just don't remember because I'm just trying to figure out how I would have missed that in 1992.
Yeah.
We were seeing everything back then.
It does have some part of the soundtrack of it you've heard in trailers later on.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those where you're like, oh, it's that. That's that one. Like, I believe they used it in L.A. Confidential's trailer. There's some music from Hoffa in that. Anyway.
Yeah. And DeVito made really good movies, but I just think of him as more of a dark comedy guy.
Yeah, I think he...
War of the Roses.
I think he was just like, I'm ready to do something really big, and this is going to be... I'm going to get my buddy Jack in on this and all this. And he made a movie like, I mean, it's like he was trying to shoot this like De Palma and you know, it just doesn't come off. I mean, there's some things in there. You're like,
oh my God, De Palma's Hoffa would have been amazing. I wish we'd seen that. But anyway,
Okay, so yes, The Irishman. I know that it's just I think that's amusing. I think that's people great. Will like that. But where do we want to start with The Irishman? It's an epic where it's basically telling Frank Sheeran's story, and then it just sort of marries into Hoffa's story. I think the important thing about Sheeran in this movie, regardless of whether it's true or not or whatever, is that he is really that bridge between the gangsters and the Teamsters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Because he's a Teamster guy. But then he starts doing like some real gangster stuff. Like at the beginning, he's stealing the beef or whatever and giving it to restaurants on his own, and then going to the actual restaurants that paid for the beef and saying, I don't know what happened. I mean, which leads to a pretty funny scene with Ray Romano playing his lawyer and everything. And they're going through that whole thing where, you know, like, well, have you ever hit anybody on the job? No. and then saying, he goes, well, you know, if whether you did it or not, I'm going to defend you. He's like, okay, whatever. And then, I mean, you know, you can tell me. He's like, you really want me to know? It's in the trailer. But like,
that leads to that really great courtroom scene too, though, where the judge turns on the company as opposed to De Niro.
Yeah. Which I think we're led to believe later that judge was paid off.
Probably.
Because later on they're talking about how Pesci is the one that you go to when you need to pay a judge off, how much, if you need somebody promoted, he can tell you yes or no.
Mm. And he's Romano's cousin?
Yeah, I think it's cousin. Yeah. And he works for a big, like, Harvey Keitel is in this. We didn't even get to that point.
Just for a hot minute.
Yeah,
too.
He plays Angelo Bruno and the Buffalino, whatever, Russ Buffalino is what Pesci plays, works with him and everything. And there's some really interesting dynamics in this because of Frank's friendship with Russ. He gets bailed out of a situation where he would have been killed.
Yeah.
Because somebody out of the blue tells him to bomb this laundry.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Whispers.
Yeah, it's Whispers.
It's the other Whispers.
The other Whispers. And somehow Bruno gets wind of this, which I wish the movie could have shown us how. Yeah. Because all it was this Whispers guy goes to De Niro, and De Niro's like, okay, I'll do this. And he doesn't tell anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't think Whispers would go around going, I'm going to get that bombed.
Yeah, I almost got the impression there was something there we were supposed to know, like maybe like Bruno was behind it, really. But and De Niro, because that scene almost felt like De Niro kept looking over at him like, I can't give his name in. But like you said, we don't ever see that.
Yeah.
That was just kind of the feeling I got. Like maybe there was more going on there. Maybe something was cut. But I don't know.
But
it was a good scene.
It's one of the first deals that we see in here where Frank has to do something or he's going to get killed. He says, oh, I didn't know that was your laundry. You had a piece of that laundry and blah, blah, blah. And Bruno's like, you have a very good friend over here in Russ. And Pesci's got that look on his face like you were.
Yeah, that's it. He plays it so beautifully.
Oh, and I said Bruno. I meant Russ. That's what I meant. Like Russ was maybe had something to do with it.
Maybe. I don't know. He goes, well, yeah, I know. And Bruno's like, I don't think you know how much. And he's like, well, okay, well, I'll just give this guy his money back. And he goes, he won't need his money back.
And he still doesn't get it. He's like, no, I mean, I'll just give it back to him. He's like, no, he won't need his money back.
Yeah, and then you get that there is now an arrangement that he must kill this guy or else he's going to end up dead. Mm. And so that's why there's this just brutal going around the corner, and the guy's like, I didn't know what side you were coming from, and boom, boom, and he just walks off.
There's a few brutal murders in this movie. Like the gunshot, there's a lot of gunshots, there's a lot of cutting steak, and then gunshots to the head.
But it mirrors something that happens later on in the another deal that happens, because when Hoffa is on the block at this point, and he's creating too much problem. Thing is, Frank is friends with him and the mob, but and it seems like through all the discussions that you can hear through the context, is there's a very good chance that Frank could get killed in this too.
Mm-hmm.
When they decide that they're going to kill Hoffa, and the whole thing comes down to, well, he's going to have to kill him or else he's going to be dead. And that's what I got from that towards the end. Is
that what you got?
I did.
That's a really interesting interpretation, and it's probably very, very obvious. I think he says something, Pesci's character says something like, if it's going to be anybody, because it has to be done. If it's going to be anybody, it has to be you because you're that close to him. He's the only one. You're the only one that he trusts, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. But it makes perfect sense to where, you know, it's also, or it could be both of them, where you're all out of here.
I think now, and it's possible that the movie might be saying that, but it is also pretty clear that they don't need him to get close to him because once they drive out to that Red Fox place, Hoth is surprised to see him in the back seat of that car.
Yeah, he's like, yeah. He smiles and he's like, oh, I'm safe because I've got...
Yes. So I think that they could have gotten to him if they wanted to.
I see.
And I think that it was contingent on him. This was his penance for, you know, this was him paying off his debt. Because there's a point where after this happens, Pesci says, I chose us over him.
Yeah.
And it seemed like that was what was trying to, the negotiations behind the scenes that we're not seeing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you even get like when Pesci at that banquet scene where Pesci has that conversation with Pacino, you kind of get that was like a possibility that Hoffa could have gotten out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But he just, you know, he was just stubborn. Yeah. And he just mm-hmm. wouldn't do what they want him to do. So then, and then Pesci gives Frank the ring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at that point, it's kind of like he's going to protect him, but he can't protect Hoffa anymore.
Yeah.
And Frank got out of a lot of things, actually. Like, Russ protects Frank, like, the entire movie. Because I don't think if it was for him, Frank would have survived. Because Frank made it very clear at that banquet he was siding with Hoffa.
Yeah.
Or he seemed to make it clear, you know.
Well, yeah. So. Well, he was saying, I'm going to have to talk to him. And this is the devastating thing about it for Hoffa, I guess, or for anybody who likes Hoffa or whatever, is that it looks like he has numerous chances to get back and just stay alive during this, like a ton. And then by the time he calls Frank at that payphone and he says, okay, I'm going to sit down with this Tony Pro guy and everything.
Yeah.
The order to kill him has already happened at this point because he's waited too long and his timing is so bad and everything. And that's when Pesci's like, tells, you know, De Niro to get on the plane and all that. And he's like, I did everything I could for him.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it goes to show when somebody is that powerful for that long and then they get thrown into jail and everything. And they think that everything's going to be just back to the way it was when they got back and they start causing all these problems. They still have this delusion that they're this powerful.
Yeah.
They told him right on. They said, you can still run it without even being the name, the head of it.
Yeah.
Like you can, I mean, that was one of the things that they were talking about in the movie was that he was still controlling all this stuff, but he wanted that title.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wanted to go in front of people with the Hoffa in the background and everything. And
they just wanted him to shut up. Just like go sit at home, make your money and leave everybody alone.
And I tell you what, guys, that sounds like an awesome proposition.
Fuck yeah. Fuck yeah. Adoration of millions of people, like a steady paycheck coming in. Just stay the fuck out of there.
Yeah.
But he couldn't do it. And De Niro, that's really where De Niro starts shining is the moment he gets on the plane. And they do this great bit, I guess, we were already talking about that whole ending sequence, or with Hoffa at least. There's still probably 20 minutes after that. But that whole bit in the car is so well done because you're not really sure exactly how things are going to go down. Because there's that whole thing where the Jesse Plemons character's there. Is he Hoffa's son?
Yeah.
He's,
or son-in-law?
He's a foster son or like a family friend. I don't think biological son, though.
And then there's just a random, somebody's guy. I think his name was like Sal
Sal, who's been shown to be the assassin.
In
the movie, because Tony Pro hires him early on to kill a guy who got more votes in the
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And so then they show him as sort of that guy, and that's a thing that Scorsese's always been really good at is giving you a sense of unease about situations. that whole thing with the fish.
That's what I was about to say.
Yeah, go ahead.
You're fine. But yeah, that's what I was going with. The whole conversation about the fish where I guess Jesse Plemons had put a fish in the back seat. I mean, I guess it's true.
It's funny too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole thing, but you never know where that scene's going because they spend like probably 5 minutes talking about like, well, what kind of fish was it? Why don't you know what kind of fish
it
is?
Was it not a salmon? Yeah. A haddock?
He's like, I just got to know what happened if I get asked these questions. Yeah, yeah. Like, why are you going to get asked these questions? Like, who's asking you these questions?
Yeah, it's one of those things that it makes you very much question why it's in there. And I really think it's just more about the unease that it sets because you're like, yeah, why did he have that fish?
Well, why doesn't he know what
it is? Apparently De Niro was supposed to, Frank was supposed to sit in the front. Sal was supposed to sit in the back, I guess, with Hoffa.
Right.
And then he's like, no, I'm sitting back here.
And believe me, the idea came, I thought that it's very possible that, yes, they were going to go ahead and kill Frank there.
Yeah.
And then just go ahead and kill Hoffa when they got to him later on. And it's very possible that's the way it was going to be, but they're like, well, if this guy's going to kill Hoffa, then we don't have to worry about it.
I will say, if I missed something, that might be why, but I was a little confused why the Jesse Plemons character was there, other than I guess it was supposed to make Hoffa feel like that was safe for him to get in the car, I guess.
Maybe.
But what did they tell him he was doing? Like, that's where I got kind of confused.
Yeah,
but,
I don't know. Yeah. That it is one of those things where you don't know all the details, but it just kind of gives you this, like, weird feeling.
And it's a really good scene, so I don't really care.
There are unexpectedly funny things in this all throughout the, the movie constantly gives us updates on what happens to certain characters later in life.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
1979 guy gets shot 8 times in an alleyway, or you know this guy had a nail bomb under his porch, or you know something like that. And then there was the one where the guy's like, "This guy, well liked by all, died of natural causes in 2001."
No, yeah, this movie it's got sneaky funny stuff in there. Yeah, let me ask you just a metaphysical question, because what I've seen from people who really love this movie, and I think Aaron Dicer is one of them, is that it's different from Scorsese movies because it shows regret at the end. It shows the effects of a life of crime and stuff like that.
I completely disagree that he has regret.
Thank you. I think he has regret for the impact it had on his family, and that's it.
Yes.
He doesn't give a shit about anybody else in his way.
I agree.
The whole scene with the priest at the end, the priest is like, "Do you feel bad about what you did?" And he goes, "Well, I guess because I'm sitting here with you."
Yeah.
You know, I don't, you know, he doesn't really know, and I feel like that means no.
Yeah, yeah, I do too.
Yeah, I don't think there's any regret on his part at all.
Yeah.
Which is fine. He's not a good person.
Well, there's no redemptive arc to me. This is the problem that I do have with Scorsese movies sometimes, is that nobody is really reprimanded for the shit that they do. It's almost, it's glorified. You know, you root for Frank. You root for Joe Pesci's character. You know, you even root for Hoffa. You know, and at the end, he's got to live with his... the lack of family, but I don't think he goes to jail for a little while, but he gets out.
Yeah,
like,
that's true. So it's
pretty much fine.
So I think that's one thing in the movie I don't personally think he gets across well. He really tries to play that family card, especially with the Anna Paquin character. And I've read all the comments about she didn't say anything, right?
She says one couple of lines.
Oh, that's right. Like early or like,
late. She
late,
says
late.
Because
right,
he comes
right,
back and
right.
he's like, "I need to call Joe." And he's like, "Why?"
Yeah.
And that's literally the only thing.
Yeah,
says.
Yeah, that's right.
Why haven't you?
And I've read all this stuff though. That quietness is what Scorsese's playing up. That like she's just really, you know, disappointed in him and can't be his daughter. And there's the whole different contrast between she's really friendly with Hoffa and she's terrified of Russ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and they play that up a lot too. But I don't, but like you said, that's not enough. Like, as far as like, I mean, yeah, that sucks. I mean, I would be really upset if my daughter never wanted to talk to me again, but I think within this context of this movie, the shit that he's done, he deserves a lot worse than that.
They also weirdly just make her the favorite daughter in this, where he's got four daughters.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, you want to focus on, I guess, somebody as representative of all the daughters, I guess. I don't know. But she's the favored one throughout the entire one. There's even a part where I think De Niro says, or who is it? I can't remember who says, like, all my family or all your family, and including Peggy. You've already mentioned the family. Why do you have to mention Peggy aside from that?
And they put so much focus on her. And since I didn't really know the story and I hadn't read the book, I kind of actually thought there for a second it was going to get creepy. Like, it was like either with Hoffa or Russ.
There were a couple of moments where I was like,
Thankfully it didn't. Yes. It was just supposed to be like he was the scary one.
It was
one,
innocent
Hoffa
and
was
he
the
was
nice
probably
one.
Trying too hard. And that's trying too hard to be ingratiate himself to her and everything, like trying to tell the stupid joke about the birds in the sky and all that.
Well, and he even made the comment that him and his wife couldn't have kids, and that made him sad, and Frank was lucky. So, I mean, that makes sense. But, yeah, there were definitely a couple times where I'm like, this might be going somewhere I don't want to watch.
Yeah.
But thankfully he didn't.
I mean, all the women, as per normal for a Scorsese movie, that's not Casino or Goodfellas with individual characters. The women get super short shrift.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, I guess that's a Scorsese movie, but
and you have this great side moment with the one with I think it's Russ's wife,
yeah,
where they're talking about how she was from the original like old family, like an gangster royalty and everything. So like so it explains why when he shows up with blood on his shirt and everything, she's not like freaking out. Yeah. She's just like, I want you to just get your clothes. I'll clean them. Nobody will say anything about this and everything like that. And she's like, wow, that's a really interesting character that you gave me that much about.
That was it. I mean, even when you set up this love triangle where De Niro or Frank comes into the bar, sees the new waitress. Mm-hmm. That's it. They're boning.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, that's when I left my wife. Next scene, they're best fucking friends.
Yeah.
Oh, the mistress and the fucking
friend.
Is that
the bowling alley?
It all worked out for him. He's fucking Seinfeld. Like, it worked out. Yeah. They're friends.
Right.
God damn. So, yeah. I mean, it's a little gripe, but like you said, there's a lot more meat that they could have explored with that, too. Mm-hmm.
Well, because every time you see the actress's name, I did look her up that played Russ's wife, and I didn't really recognize her from anything. But
Catherine Narducci.
Yeah, but the few times that they give her anything to do, she stands out very well. Like, she obviously could have been given mm-hmm. more, and it would have been really interesting. What you're talking about, I had completely forgotten about because it's so minor.
Mm-hmm.
But it could have been something really cool. You know, they could have done something a little different with it.
There's a lot of, like, stuff that's just a material in this. Like, you know, the stuff that really gets you into it is, like, there's a scene that this is very Scorsesean, you know, whatever, where they're going through. So Peggy's at her school talking about Hoffa.
Yeah.
And in the middle of all of this, Hoffa's making that deal with the gangsters to fund the Sands, the Vegas casino and everything. And he's taking the money out of the pension, which mm-hmm. is the big thing that I think everybody sort of agrees that's where Hoffa got into most of his trouble, legal and on the outside where the gangsters are after him, too. He's stealing money from that pension fund, which is very wealthy. And there's even a scene with him and Tony Pro in jail where Tony Pro's that $1.2 million, they won't give it to him. He's like, yeah, because you're in jail or whatever. And he's like, you're in jail with me. And he's like, yeah, I know, but you did a completely different thing. You did extortion. I just did fraud.
No, my pension's there.
Yeah.
Where's your pension? You don't have a pension. Yeah. I have a pension. Beautiful.
But there's that whole thing where he's sitting there. He's like, he's very much committing a crime while she's doing this whole thing. Like, he's for the working man. Hoffa, so everybody loves Hoffa and everything. And they go through that whole thing with the insurance guy. There's all these different, there's all these different scams. So they have to launder money through all these different things. And so they have the insurance guy helping them out. Mm-hmm. And he says that his wife owns 22% in a ski resort and doesn't even know it. And those are the good things. When you watch stuff like Casino and everything, when he takes you through the casino and all the operations of it,
yep.
like the money coming in, the money going out, the drugs, all that stuff going on. Those were when Scorsese movies are at their height and everything. And you sort of get a high off of those. And when mm-hmm. it comes down, it's like, oh, it's now we're back to, this other stuff.
Yep. Yep.
You know?
I agree.
So, anything else that we want to talk about on this movie?
I feel like we haven't even really gotten too much into De Niro other than just talking about the things he did, but we haven't even, I don't know. It was really nice seeing De Niro back doing something that wasn't like a comedy.
I thought he was terrific in this. Yeah. And what I really like about this is the dialogue, how they set up the dialogue, where mm-hmm. they trip over words. They don't necessarily get the lines perfectly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In, even in that scene that I made fun of with Pacino with Hoffa earlier, where he's like, you motherfuckers.
Yeah.
He was like, you gave this money to his... Fuck!
Yeah.
His fucking father! Yeah, his fucking father!
Yeah, yeah.
And it's his long, pregnant pause, and you're like, did he forget his line?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then when it cuts back to the De Niro narration, like, he's fumbling over his words. And I think it's a really cool... naturalistic way.
Yeah, yeah, and like, and I think, I guess I did mention this, but like, and he's even really good. The quiet moments, I think, were my favorites, though. Like when he's on the plane, and when they walk into the house at the end with him and Hoffa, and Hoffa's about to leave, and you can just like, it's just so good. Like you can see that hesitation in what he's got to do,
mm-hmm.
and even at the last second, you're not sure if he's gonna do it, and then he just blows him away, and mm-hmm. It's so good. It's chilling.
Yeah. Another interesting thing too is a lot of the Boardwalk Empire cast is in this. Not like most of them, but like a lot. So yeah, Bobby Cannavale is in this. Stephen Graham, who played Capone.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
You had the little girl Peggy apparently was. So I'm assuming she was very tiny.
Oh wow.
No.
Boardwalk Empire. The guy Jack Houston, who played the guy with the patch over his
eye. Yeah, yeah. Oh,
he
yeah.
plays Robert Kennedy.
Yeah,
in
yeah,
this.
Yeah.
And there might be a couple others that I'm not. I think the guy who played Sal was in Boardwalk Empire as
oh,
well.
Oh, really?
I really liked him. I meant to look him up, and I forgot after the movie was over because
Lewis canceled me.
Few minutes he was in, I really enjoyed it. But I think that scene was so good. That was my favorite scene. Was the fish?
No, oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was. I don't know if it's the best scene.
No, it's great. It's hilarious.
It was so funny.
Yeah, it really is. It's just kind of it really does. And it could just be. Maybe it's not an unease thing. Maybe it's just a humorous thing. I don't know. I would love to hear the story behind
that. Well, yeah, I know. And I kind of, I mean, I get the impression that Sal thinks there might be more to it because, like, you know, De Niro is making such a big deal about sitting in the back.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he knows what's got to happen later. But then, I mean, clearly Frank is supposed to do it. I mean, I assume because when they get to the house and drop them off, they leave.
Mm-hmm.
Like, immediately, Plemons just pulls out of the driveway.
Yeah.
I don't know where they're going.
Right.
It's a nice death scene. It's weird for me to say that, but I actually rewound and watched that death scene a couple of times because it's emotional. It's quiet. It's intense. It's they get in there for 2 seconds and Hoffa's like, let's get out of here.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you could see like just the briefest bit of regret on De Niro's face.
Yeah.
And then pow, pow. And you hear Hoffa go, oh, like you actually feel the impact
yeah.
of it. But you don't, it's not gratuitous. You don't see the blood and all that shit. I think it's really, really cool.
Yeah,
the way
that might be. I mean, you see it on the wall afterwards, but yeah, that might be the one scene where they do it. They shoot somebody and you don't see like the brains.
Yeah.
Like explode.
I think that's
out.
A nice choice instead of like, oh, the death of Hoffa. It's
yeah.
His brains are everywhere.
That, I mean, it does include one where there, though it doesn't go quite as planned. And that's that Crazy Joe character, played by, Sebastian Maniscalco,
Yeah, the stand-up comic,
yeah,
right?
He's a stand-up comic, and which is funny, he's in the scene where Jim Norton is playing Don Rickles. Jim Norton's also a stand-up comic. Jim Norton's playing Don Rickles, and Don Rickles makes fun of these, like, he's like, I make fun of everybody, blah, blah, blah. You know, I make fun of the Jews and the Italians. Well, not those Italians.
Yeah. Is this the guy that hosted the VMAs?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't even realize that was
I would not have, but there were just a couple of things that made me go, is that dude? I think it's that dude.
Also, Vince Vaughn had this thing like, I don't know, 10 years ago maybe, the Wild West comedy show.
He
was one of the comics on there. And I always remember they were in San Diego and he had this bit about people wearing flip-flops and the audience just turned on him. Because,
oh, really?
Because all the guys in San Diego wear sandals. So he was making fun of guys wearing sandals. And I mean, they
That's
just...
so silly, but I love it.
Oh, you should look it up. It might be on YouTube because, they literally just turn on his ass and start booing him. And he can't get through it. And then I think it's like John, I can't remember that act. He's real Southern. I think it's the, I don't know if it's the Hemi guy, but whoever the person that followed him up was just like, ooh, I got to follow that shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, sorry.
But that killing, he goes in, he's got a plan. Like the funny thing about this is that he tells the plan. He's like, all right, you know, you want to stake out the place, blah, blah, blah. You want to know what you want to do this. Normally you would do this, but this is such a small place. You want to just go in there and kill him and get out of there.
Yeah.
He goes in and he shoots him twice, and then he starts running.
Yeah.
And then he goes through this whole thing about which gun all that. Like, this is too loud. This is too soft. This does the job, but it's, you know, whatever. And then goes through all this stuff, and it takes like five or six shots to kill the guy.
Yeah.
And the Sal killing is pretty funny too, because the reason why they put a hit on him is that he goes to a courthouse, a federal court or whatever, mm-hmm. or a federal building, mm-hmm. and he's like, he didn't tell anybody about that. He didn't tell anybody about going to that. So what do you think he's going to? He's not talking about, like, you know, something innocuous. And so they go and they kill him, and then he goes, well, and it turns out that someone, he did tell somebody, but that somebody didn't tell the right people.
Yeah, yeah.
It was actually a bad hit.
Yeah.
At that point, they're just killing everybody. Yeah, they're just like, we're not taking any chances.
The scene, the Crazy Joe scene, was set up so beautifully, because there's this code that between Russ and Frank, where he's like, you know, don't kill him, but light a firecracker under his ass or something like that. And Frank knows exactly what that means.
Yeah.
And then, like, he'll say something like, this needs to be taken care of. And Frank will know that means kill the guy.
Yeah.
With the Crazy Joe thing, it's where they're like, oh, you're brothers. Yeah, I'm not your brother, but you're brothers. Everybody's cool. Like, mm-hmm. happy birthday. And he just looks at him.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right. What?
He's like,
a job like this, you need two guns.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's so awesome. He sets this whole thing up. I've got this plotted out to the detail. And then it takes like 800 shots to kill that guy.
Hey, yeah, I mean, it's like talking about this. It's funnier than I remember. Yeah, like, now that we're going through it, you know, there is a lot of good comedy in here.
Yeah. And there was one other thing I wanted to bring up.
All right, I'm in an A. Fuck you.
Yeah. But I can't remember right now. Anyway, I you know, this is one of those things. I've seen it twice. I'm still at a B on this. Could end up being on an A at some point.
And I'm definitely going to watch it again. I might even watch it again before the year's up. I mean, it's definitely going to, I mean, it's one of those movies that, I mean, it's going to stay in my rotation at some point, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just, like I said, I might get to an A eventually, but right now I'm just not quite there.
Yeah.
Yeah. B plus. Good rating?
Yeah. No, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good. I think some people are, you know, that's the thing. People expect the A, and then we say B. And people are like, wait a minute, this movie's a masterpiece. What are you doing?
And this is another really good movie. I think a lot of years recently have seemed a little more backloaded. This year seems really backloaded, mm-hmm. because, like, I swear to God, like, 8 of the last 9 movies I've seen have just been freaking amazing. Mm-hmm. And going into, like, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I mean, I would have had stuff like Happy Death Day to You in my top 10, which, not that that's a bad movie, but most years it wouldn't be anywhere close to that. But now, like, since then, I've seen so many fucking great movies. I don't even know what my favorite is anymore.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. One other thing. That was Steven Van Zandt playing Jerry Vale. I think the guy who's singing. I think he's the guy singing in that one scene in the... He's the crooner that's singing in that one scene. I can't find the image of him, but I believe he's the guy who's crooning during that one scene. And I remember people in the audience were laughing because it's so dramatic and everything. And it is probably not him singing. I think it's a recording. But I think he plays Jerry Vale.
There's also a distracting cameo by Action Bronson.
Yes, he's hilarious though.
He is, man.
You know, which one do you want? You know, that's a good one over there.
Yeah, it's like he goes through all this stuff. Like, he's very loose with his, like, death language, essentially, because he doesn't think that the person coming in. He goes, okay, so is this a he or a she? And then De Niro's like, it's me.
Yeah,
he's like, oh well. Yeah. All right. Well, that'll do it for this mini pod. Go to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins, on Facebook. Tell us what you think. We also have methods to talk to us on CinemaSins Twitter, Music Video Sins Twitter, SoundCloud. We are also on Discord. And if you want to get on Discord, we have a link on the right side of the Reddit page that we have, and or you can go to Facebook and ask me for one in the private links. And where else can we get people?
You can reach me if you want to talk to me on Twitter. I'm at SamLoomis13. There's also a TV Sins Twitter, and I am on the Behind the Sins podcast every week with Danae Hughes and Aaron Dicer. And we actually have a Behind the Sins Twitter account now, so you can check that out. I believe it's CinemaSinsBTS. Mm-hmm. I think it's at CinemaSinsBTS.
Okay.
And it'll be pretty easy to tell that Danae is controlling that, and it's delightful.
Yes, it is. Yeah, we're everywhere.
Yeah. Well, that will do it for this mini-pod. It's Chris Atkins and Barrett Sher and Jonathan Watkins. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.
I mean, I used it last time because of Ken. This is where Kenzie sat.
Oh, that's right.
So, but yeah, but I usually do kill it.
She was so adorable.
Indeed.
Thank you. I already got a couple of tweets from patrons because they got to hear it today.
What's funny is how tentative she is, like at the beginning. And then once she gets going, like, yeah. She's like, all right, well, here's the deal right here. There's a water horse, yeah. And I don't know where the fuck the water horse came from.
Elsa has three powers.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, when we came
then
in.
Then she went to four. She
yeah. Like, mm-hmm. Chris is like, hi, Mackenzie, and she didn't talk. I was like, oh, this is good.
Yeah, that was when she came in.
Yeah, it's like, this is going to go well.
And she was there, and I was like, hey, what's going on? And Jonathan's like, are you going to say hi? And she's like,
this is going
great
well.
Start. That movie, was Gone Girl critically acclaimed when it came out?
I
think so.
I think it was like 90-something on Rotten Tomatoes or whatever.
Oh, okay. Because it definitely still has a lot of love. Like, people put that up there in top level of Fincher shit, and I'm like,
Fincher's like Tarantino and Scorsese, though. I mean, like, Fincher's probably got five, like, solid A's for me, and Gone Girl would be one of them. It might be at the bottom.
You really like Gone Girl?
Oh, I love it. Yeah, I think it's excellent. I think it's one of the better adaptations, actually, if you want to go, like, Rosemary's Baby, I think, is probably, like, at the top of the list. But, like, if you want, like, a true adaptation where they adapt it, like, they literally adapted it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty solid. Like, he doesn't really leave much out, and he kind of nails everything that the book hits.
I don't know. Well, Affleck's character kills me.
I think Gillian Flynn wrote the movie, too. So, she wrote the book. Is that her name, Gillian Flynn? Yeah.
I think it's Gillian Flynn.
Or Gillian, yeah, it might be. Her new,
she's got like J.K. Rowling money.
Well, clearly, and she hasn't even really, her new book, her follow-up book is coming out, I think, next year. She hasn't written anything since then. She wrote Widows. I mean, she's written some screenplays, and, you know, I think her and Fincher are doing a TV show together that's coming out pretty soon.
She hasn't written another novel since Gone Girl?
No, she wrote like a novella, but yeah.
What was the novella? Do you remember?
No, even though I read it, but I don't remember the title. Grown Up, something like that.
Gone Girl, she wrote Sharp Objects.
Sharp Objects and Dark Places were before Gone Girl. And those have all been adapted. Sharp Objects was a TV show, and then Dark Places was a pretty mediocre movie with Charlize Theron.
Did you ever watch Sharp Objects?
I haven't seen it yet, no. I do have HBO again, though, so I will be watching it
fucking
at some
rules,
point.
Man.
Yeah, that's what I hear. I've heard it follows the book really well, though, and like I just read that book like maybe a year ago, so like I kind of want to put some distance between me. 87% on Rotten Tomatoes is Gone Girl, so pretty high.
I don't know, I thought it wasn't all that well received.
Because Zodiac is my, I guess that's my best. And then probably Seven.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Fight Club's in there.
Social Network.
Do you like Social Network? God, yes. Fuck. Social Network might actually be my favorite.
That's the one I've watched the
most. That's what I'm saying. Social Network, Zodiac, Fight Club, Seven, which Fight Club's one that's grown on me. Seven, Gone Girl, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
The Game.
The Game. All those are like B+ to A.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's... Benjamin Button's like
Alien
okay.
3.
Alien 3 is the only one I just dislike.
It had nothing to do with David Fincher.
I know. Because even Benjamin Button, there's things about Benjamin Button I remember liking. I've only seen it once, but
I didn't like that movie.
I don't remember. I didn't hate it.
$200 million total.
What, Valkyrie?
Valkyrie.
Including.
Yeah, it made 83 domestic, 200 okay. worldwide.
But that's still, I mean, that's pretty good for...
Played really well in Germany.
Yeah, it was because it came out... It came out in around the Christmas time.
Yeah.
And it was, there was a,
right
a,
at Christmas.
There was a decent amount of competition because there was a ton of movies coming out in Christmas. And it didn't have like the big, you know, well, Tom Cruise is in this movie. It should have done way more, blah, blah, blah. And it was, a, you know, maybe 14 million opening or something. Well, oh, 21 million opening.
I think people made fun of Cruise too, because doesn't, is that the one where like, he's German but doesn't really do an accent? And
yeah.
I've seen
like
it
that movie, right?
I've seen it once. Yeah, I remember liking it.
It's good.
Is that, no, he didn't try a mustache.
Did Singer direct it or did McQuarrie?
No, Singer.
And McQuarrie wrote it, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't think McQuarrie
wrote
it.
Oh, okay. I thought they were...
Yeah, he was involved. Or he produced it?
Who knows?
He's on it as a producer, but I don't know if he wrote it, too.
Yeah, a ton of people are
Is
there.
That Singer's like last good movie, maybe?
Yeah, Chris McQuarrie did write it. And then somebody named Nathan Alexander was a co-writer on it, but
the only reason I remember that is because I thought that was, it was kind of hyped as like, you know, the reteaming of Usual Suspects.
I forgot that Karis Van Houten from Game of Thrones was in this.
Really?
Too. Yeah. She's the
mom, right?
She's I don't know, I don't remember. But Tom Wilkinson, Terrence Stamp, Kenneth Branagh, Eddie Izzard.
Karis
Van Houten from Game of Thrones.
She's not the mom in Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
she's
the
naked red lady.
Yeah, red lady.
Valkyrie's about Tessa Thompson, right?
Yes. It is. It's her life.
God, that's a good cast, man.
I think a lot of actors just let it go because at some
don't
point.
Don't say that.
Huh?
Don't say that.
Why?
Because that breaks my case.
Oh, sorry.
It's devastating to my case.